Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Welcome back to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I have two amazing guests with me today that I am excited to learn more about, and I cannot wait to share them with you. Allie French and Erica Stein are certified integrative nutrition health coaches with advanced training in gut health and hormone health, health and wellness experts, and podcast hosts. Their community, the Courageous Wellness Collective, serves to help like-minded individuals learn, grow, thrive, and work towards improved personal and community wellness. Allie and Erica recognize that the wellness industry can be highly inaccessible, and they're here to bridge the gap between individual journeys and community initiatives. I'm obsessed with that. Allie and Erica, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you both.
Thank you. We are both really excited to be here.
I have a super fun question to ask you, and I ask this of all guests, so you'll have to tag team. I would love to know, beyond the coaching journey that we're going to dive deeper into, what would your dating profile say about you if you had one? So kind of relationship status at this point is moot. Just tell us the fun facts. What would your dating profile say?
Well, go ahead.
It's like, who should go first?
You.
It's like, that's so funny. Great question. So my name is Erica. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles. I am obsessed with astrology, and I'm a Libra, Aquarius, Capricorn. Those are my big three. And yeah, and I love sushi. I guess that's my little dating profile right there.
I would definitely, I guess, because I live in LA and I'm friends and co-host with Erica, of course, have to put my astrological signs too, because I feel like that's necessity in a dating profile. I'm a triple Aries, so it's easy peasy, all fire. Aries, sun, moon, rising. I'm originally from New Jersey and New York City. I have a deep love and actually a background in musical theater, fun fact. So I could like nerd out to musical theater with anyone. And I'm a practicing Buddhist. And so was Erica. I'll put that in her profile too.
There's so much overlap. No wonder you guys are BFFs and podcast hosts.
Yeah, we're also sister signs. Aries and Libra are the sister signs. So yeah, it works well. We have what the other needs, in at least in astrology terms. So yeah, it's great.
Who needs the dating profile? It's a perfect match just between the two of you.
Yes.
So Allie, you said background in musical theater. Does that mean you know like all the lyrics to like Broadway shows?
Many. I'm going to be honest. Many. I was professional performer for many, many years, traveling the world. And I still do from time to time when Courageous Wellness isn't fully, you know, kicking my butt or, taking up our time, which it is. And I love, yes, I can, you know, I have the nerdy musicals that I particularly love, and I'm pretty good all around. I try to keep a pulse on newer stuff too.
I love that. I'm one of those kids who grew up like listening to musicals, and I'm from Pennsylvania, born and raised. So, you know, New York, Broadway stuff, it's kind of like close enough in proximity to go spend the day. So I'm sure that we could just have a blast together. But my husband did not grow up that way. So, you know, I'll just break out in song, and he's like, what the heck even is that? I have no idea. So ladies, I would love for you to tell us a little bit more about the powerful stories that I know you both have that served as the catalyst to get you to where you are today. So fun facts aside, sounds like you're both very cool people that I would love to be friends with. But how did you end up here doing this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, Allie and I have very different stories, but they kind of come together. We met in our
late 20s, which is wonderful, through our Buddhist practice, as Ali mentioned, is one of our fun facts. But my background, so I grew up in Malibu, California, in a little small beach community out in Los Angeles. And, you know, growing up, my parents went through a difficult time kind of between the ages of like 8, 10, but like about like 10 to 14, my parents went through some struggles. And during that time, we were food insecure. And I say that because it really informs a lot of my wellness journey of sorts. Because during that time, being food insecure, we relied on honestly whatever we could. You know, my parents relied on whatever they could to feed their children. And so, you know, some difficult, I wouldn't say difficult habits, but certain food habits were instilled in me. And a lot of people, which I have learned, that grew up food insecure do struggle with food later in life. And so if we then flash forward to my 20s, you know, I kind of always carried a little bit of extra weight. And it was in my early 20s that I really started blaming my body and that weight on what was or wasn't going well in my life, right? Like if I was thinner, then I'd have the job and the boyfriend and whatever it was. I blamed my body for a lot of things. And I subsequently then went through a self-love journey after I went on a really bad date, back to the dating profile. I think I was like 22 at the time, but I went on a really bad date. And it wasn't actually, it wasn't a bad date. I always say it was a bad date, but it wasn't a bad date. It was a bad date because he didn't call me. And so I was really upset about it. And I was on the phone actually with a woman from our Buddhist organization who didn't really know me at all. But I was just complaining about my body. I don't know why I had, it was the perfect moment, right? Timing, it was the perfect moment, but I was just complaining about my body. And I was like, he would have called if I was thinner or prettier or X, Y, and Z. And she actually stopped me mid-conversation and said something that changed my life. And she said, wow, Erica, you do not value yourself at all. And I was like, wow, whoa, hit me pretty deep. And then, you know, she said some other things to me as well that, you know, were like things in our Buddhist community. And then she told me to go home and chant. We chant. And she said to chant to really essentially value and treasure my life. And I go home and I write on a hot pink sticky note, you are a treasure. You are a precious gem. And I started chanting to treasure my life. That was the only thing I chanted about. And my entire life really transformed from that place. So in my largest body, at my largest weight, I got the dream job on, I also have a background in entertainment. So I was working on these television shows and I met the man who is now my husband 11 years later. And, you know, again, at my largest body, at my largest weight, and my husband is like the best good man you could ever know or meet. And so my whole life changed in my largest body. And then a couple years after that, I found a workout class that I really liked and enjoyed. And I ended up losing a substantial amount of weight, about 50 pounds. And that was a really interesting experience because I learned it really wasn't about my body, right? Like I didn't consciously, it wasn't a conscious weight loss experience. And since then, you know, I've gained weight, I've lost weight, you know, bodies are meant to change and transform as we age and grow. So it's really not about the weight at all. It was really a self-love journey. And yeah, that was kind of my experience. And I can pass it on to you, Ali, because I know yours is a little bit different, but that's kind of my wellness background and wellness journey.
Thank you for sharing, Erica. I can't wait to dive into some of the nuggets that you shared.
Yeah. And so Erica had this whole experience and I didn't really know this about her, but I similarly to her, went through some pretty transformative sort of health-related stuff. As I mentioned, I actually do have a performing arts background, was always very sort of physical, using my body in for my work, essentially. And but at 29, I was diagnosed with a rare cancerous tumor on my back. And it was strange because it just looked like a bruise. And I had a doctor tell me to ignore it, that it was no big deal. And then I just sort of had this experience where I kind of stuck with it, where I'm like, oh, but this bruise hasn't gone away. You know, it was like, there's something in my mind that was like, maybe you should pursue this more. So anyway, I had my doctor monitor it. And long story short, I wound up getting a diagnosis and had to go through multiple surgeries. But fortunately, I was cancer-free and we caught it at a time that after three surgeries, I didn't have to do any additional treatment, which was very, very fortunate. But I had always experimented with food. Like I was vegetarian at the time, but like I went through intense food cravings when I was healing. And I just, all I wanted was steak. And like, it was weird after 4 years of not eating meat to really have to listen to what my body was telling me and what it was really craving at that time. So I continued the experimentation with food and I listened to it and I fed myself and I felt amazing. And the healing journey and the energy, like my energy started to kind of raise again. I realized I had been really low energy through all this time. And this was way before nutrition school or any sort of formal education, but sort of like how my introductory experience with listening to my body, listening to my intuition in medical situations, all of those things sort of came together. And Erica, that was around the time I met Erica. I had just gone through that, or maybe that was just after that. And so cut to a few years later, kind of like long story medium. I had been living in Japan for a few years. I was doing a pretty intense musical theater contract where I was doing 15 shows a week. And I was really exploring blood sugar balance and things like that. Again, very experimental with how food worked for me. And Erica and I realized that we were reading the same nutrition book over our social media. And so she slid into my DMs. I moved back from Japan. You know, the following year, we had been going through big transformations in our personal life, and we came together in a different way as friends. We weren't close friends before that. And we really shared these stories with each other for the first time. And we're just like pretty honest about it. And from that, that little nugget of sharing our wellness or health challenges and wellness journeys, the spark of the idea for Courageous Wellness was born because we're like, well, if we have these stories and we've really gotten something out of sharing them with each other, what could we create to help other people feel the same way? And that's how Courageous Wellness was birthed. So we started a podcast before we went back to school, before we started our coaching, before, you know, all of the other things that have emerged from it. But we started a little baby podcast that has grown over the past so many years. So that's sort of our story.
That's amazing. It's reminding me of what I believe is a Brené Brown quote about silence breeding shame, essentially. So the two of you, it sounds like, have some really powerful stories that are so relatable to so many of us in different ways. And so why not talk more about it? And I want to dive into some of the specific topics that I know the two of you have experienced and I'm sure can both speak to. Erica, I want to start by talking about body dysmorphia because I know that you have a personal journey navigating body dysmorphia. Can you first maybe define for everybody listening what body dysmorphia is and tell us a little bit about how you experienced it?
Yeah. So, you know, what's really interesting, and I think a lot of people, whether or not you have a weight loss experience or not, can identify maybe with body dysmorphia. So this isn't like a scholarly definition for anyone listening, but you know, my experience with body dysmorphia and my understanding of it is really not being able to see the way you look in a true sense. So even when, and I had this experience, I think a great way to explain it is just sharing an example of it. And I remember, like I said, I kind of had an accidental weight loss because I found a workout class I loved. I was going a few days a week, but I wasn't consciously trying to lose the weight. And so it was about, maybe like 9 months later, something like that. I had to do, an event that required like an all black uniform of like black pants, black blazer. And I knew I had been losing weight because, you know, my pants were looser or I bought some new clothes, but I hadn't worn this black blazer in a long time and I thought it would fit. And so I go to like the back of my closet, I pull out this blazer thinking it's going to fit perfectly. And it's hanging off my body, right? Like I was swimming in it. And so that's just an example of, I clearly did not see the way that I looked. And that continued to carry on where I still at that time, I would still feel much bigger than I actually was. And I think, you know, that can be common whether or not you've lost weight or not, because we live in a society that really focuses on, you know, thinness. And I do think we live in a fat phobic culture. And, you know, that's a tangent. We could go off on many tangents here. But, you know, with that said, I think I guess that answers your question. I can pause there, but that's kind of what the definition of body dysmorphia for me is, and something that I've, you know, experienced and overcome and still struggle with from time to time, but also help other women go through as well. And if you asked another question, I've now forgotten it. So I hope that was an okay start.
Oh, it was a great start. I want to dive into it a little deeper because I know that a lot of the women that I work with can relate to this. Mm-hmm. And coming from both sides of the spectrum, right? Maybe I lived in a larger body. I lost weight intentionally or unintentionally. I can't combine the image of myself in my head and the image of what I see in the mirror. But I've also heard the inverse of that, where maybe someone feels like they are different than what they see in the mirror because what they see in the mirror is larger than how they identify or how they view themselves. So it doesn't sound like it's all coming from one direction. Like it can be regardless of weight status.
Yeah. I think it's really just not being able to see yourself. And I think an interesting thing that, you know, body dysmorphia is actually really interesting because I think for me, it's really about like unpacking my relationship with my body in general. And for me, it always goes back to, and I was recently reminded of this because, you know, my weight loss journey started and my self-love journey started in 2013. So that's about 10 years ago. And we've had a pandemic and I was 24, 10 years ago. And now I'm, you know, about to turn 35. And so my body has also changed in the last decade. As I mentioned earlier, bodies are not supposed to stay the same our entire lives, right? We are supposed to change and grow. And if you've had babies or children, right, your body is not supposed to be the same size it was when you were 16 or 22 or 25 or right? Our bodies are going to ebb and flow. And so I say this because something that I've recently realized in a lot of the work that Allie and I do, it really doesn't, yes, food is a big component of nutrition, but it really doesn't have to do with food at all. It's really about our relationship with ourselves. And I think for me, every single person has a different, for lack of a better word, I'm just going to say like core wound or core thing that they struggle with, right? And you hear this all the time. It's like you can change the job, you can change the relationship, you can change the way you eat. But if we don't deal with that kind of root cause core issue that we have with ourselves, we're going to still struggle with the same thing. It'll just be at a different job or in a different relationship or in a different body, right? That's why there's no happiness is not an external thing. And so for me, I realized the best way I can combat my own body dysmorphia and help others combat their own is it really does go back to like working on the way that we love and value ourselves. Because when my like self-worth, self-love is the strongest, when I feel worthy, my body confidence, the way I feel about my body image is also at its highest. And so that's something that I think is something I work on every single day. And when I forget and I think I'm good, I'll come back to it in a couple months. Cause if I don't work on it every day, it'll come back. But yeah, the self-love component I think is a really big part in combating that. And then practically, you know, sometimes we were just talking about this and we have an episode coming out in October with Jenny Schatzel, who is a great resource on body image and self-love. And we talked about this on her episode that's coming out too. But, you know, sometimes I'll look at photos of myself from like even 5 years ago or 6 years ago, and I'll literally look at these pictures and be like, why was I not running around literally naked? Like, you know, and like the, like literally in bathing suits all the time, right? Like, why was I not running around? But I remember, and I think a lot of women have those photos, but I remember at that time when I didn't feel confident maybe about my arms or about my, whatever it may be. And now I look at those photos and I'm like, wow, you didn't see yourself, right? And so in present day that helps me be like, when I'm having a bad body image day or I'm feeling like I don't see myself, you know, I'm like, well, you probably can't see yourself now. And life is so much more about the way we look. So like, you know, we're worthy of food. We're worthy of fun. We're worthy of clothes. We're worthy of going out. And so these are just some of the ways I personally combat it in myself as well, because I don't think there's a there, right? Like if I wasn't there 6 years ago in like my smallest body that, you know, I still had issues with, I just, it helps me be like, you're not seeing yourself clearly now either. And yeah, that's kind of my experience with body dysmorphia for myself as well.
And I think a lot of people who are listening, I know, can relate, because I've heard them say things like, I look back at this photo and I just thought I was so humongous and so unhappy at that size, at that weight, at that whatever. And looking back, I'm thinking the same thing. Why wasn't I running around naked, right? Like I look so great in that photo, but it wasn't the relationship that they had with their body or themselves at the time. Do you think that that goes back to what you mentioned about the core wound? Like there's something going on, whether like internally with your mindset or maybe something else going on that's unaddressed. And so that's why, regardless of like size, shape, weight, there's just this baseline unhappiness or discontentment.
Yeah, I think so. And Ali, I'm curious too about what you would say to this as well, because Ali, you know, works with individuals who struggle with this. And she honestly works with me all the time too. She's basically my coach. I utilize her for everything. But yes, you know, I think it all goes back to our mindset. Something Ali and I talk about often is, you know, is especially during my menstrual cycle, you know, I think a lot of women can relate to this. You'll wake up and you'll have like an ugly day, right? Where you're like, oh, like I don't like the way I look. And then 24, 48 hours later, you look in the mirror and you feel like you're the hottest thing in the world, right? And nothing, your body literally cannot change like that in 24 or 48 hours, right? But we've all had that experience of waking up and feeling, you know, like the monster version of ourselves, and just a day or two later feeling like, you know, we're Gigi Hadid or something. We're like, oh, I'm feeling myself. Some people, it even happens in the same day, right? And so I think that just proves it really, it goes back to a mindset shift. And I'm a really big advocate of journaling. Journaling has helped me tremendously. And sometimes I just try to get clear with my thoughts and brain dump and just be like, what is going on here? Because I do think, you know, my core wound, I do think has to do with like self-worth and feeling like I'm enough. And so that's why for me, it always goes back to self-love. But for somebody else, it could be feel of failure or perfectionism, right? Like we all have different root causes or core wounds of what causes us to suffer. But I do think it really, it's not about what we're eating. It's not about, you know, it really isn't about how we think we look. I think it's all about our mind. But yeah, Ali, I'm curious for you too, what you'd have to say on this.
Yeah. And well, I think also we have to ask questions. And actually, Erica, this does remind me of the Jenny conversation too, which again will be a great resource if anybody like wants to dive deeper into this too. But ask questions too about why we might be feeling a certain way, or just to build awareness of in the moment when we're having certain feelings. Like stop and ask yourself some questions. And one of the things that, like, as you guys were talking just now, one of the questions that came up for me too, which I don't think we give always enough credit to, and credit might be the wrong word, but responsibility to, is the culture we live in, is the society and the messaging and the content and the, like, what, so that we don't create shame around what's going on in our mind. Like, if we are having a bad day or if we are feeling not great, to even have questions about that, okay, why? Maybe it's because I received a lot of like messaging from this content yesterday and I'm not aware of it, but I'm going to create awareness of it now. So it's like, so I don't need to shame my own mind for feeling the way it does too. And I think just like having curiosity around all of it can help build awareness. And, you know, I was recently thinking about this because I saw some video on, I think it was like maybe from 2007. I'm going to say like in the 10 to 15 year window, which is a while ago, but not that long ago. And it was like a couple different commercials and like TV shows. And I was shocked and appalled at like what the content was. Like even a woman staring at a cheesecake in her refrigerator, and then another woman coming by and being like, oh, you can like just have the yogurt that is cheesecake flavored, right? Which is like all, I mean, there's so much like deep-rooted stuff within that little tiny commercial. And yeah, maybe it's 30 seconds of your life and it like just goes into your eyeballs and into your brain. But like, what does that make you feel about yourself when you want to enjoy a piece of dessert of some kind, right? Like, and then this whole like internal spiral, like there's something wrong with me because I want that, or I can't say no, or whatever it is. So anyway, I guess all I'm saying is to just like approach all of this internal stuff with curiosity, because I think that helps combat shame, which is at the root of sometimes of why we even feel badly about certain things.
Mm. I agree. I think asking questions can get us more information, more data, and maybe get us closer to that like root cause. I'm wondering though, and maybe this is just my like overly analytical brain. So Al, you were kind of talking about maybe like a poor self-image day, right? Like I look in the mirror, I'm just not liking how I feel. Maybe it's period week, which tends to be like just an overly emotional time anywhere where it's like everything sucks. And then, you know, when it passes, all of a sudden the same circumstances look so much brighter. But is having a bad body image the same thing as body dysmorphia? And if not, how
is it? Yeah, I think everybody struggles with bad body image days, right? I think body dysmorphia is when it's chronic, right? So I think we're talking about like chronically like focusing on your body and your food. If it is consuming your thoughts most of the time, that's body dysmorphia. Whereas like a bad body image day, I think we all like, right. You know, you could have, or even a bad body image moment. I think like you could wake up feeling one way and then you're going out with your girlfriends and you feel a totally different way. But body dysmorphia is something that is chronic, right? And it can lead to over-exercising, micromanaging your food, right? Like it can lead to more,
like orthorexia.
Other issues, even binge eating can be tied directly to body dysmorphia as well. So, you know, but it's a chronic state to be in as opposed to a day or a moment. And I think that makes a big difference as well.
And I think, Erica, as you said, like seeing something different, whether it's one way or the other, seeing something different, the way what you see is not necessarily reliable. Where I think the bad body image days is sometimes just like how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
I once heard the perspective of like, this was talking about body image, but checking in with yourself, Allie, with questions and maybe seeing like where that's stemming from, because perhaps it's something as simple as, oh my gosh, all I've had to drink today is Diet Coke and I haven't had any water. Or you know what, now that I think about it, like I haven't eaten a vegetable in over 24 hours. No wonder I'm feeling bloated and kind of puffy. So it may be something that is circumstantial versus like the way that I'm not seeing myself chronically.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a big thing about body dysmorphia as well that I know people can struggle with is, and I did struggle with this in my largest body, was it can prevent you from wanting to do things. So because of your body, you might not want to go out with your girlfriends or go on a date or put yourself out there or even like go to school, show up to work. Like it can really impact at its most severe choices that you're making day to day because of your body. And that's different. You know, I think we've all had a bad body image day, but we're like, well, still got to go to that birthday party. And I think when you're dealing with serious body dysmorphia, you won't go to the birthday party because of your body. And that it can be much more serious. And I think, you know, another way, since we're talking about this, that I just wanted to mention as well, I think it's really important because social media can be a tool, right? As Allie, you were mentioning with the questioning, like, what did I consume that maybe could make me feel this way? I think if you do struggle with body dysmorphia or even your body image on a consistent basis, really like taking account of who we follow online can make a really big difference. Because are we following diverse bodies? Are we following diverse content creators? And even something I think is really great with TikTok that actually blew my mind is, you know, a lot of the messaging we received, if you grew up in the 90s and early 2000s and even mid 2000s, because things have really changed in the last decade, right? It was like this perfect ideal of a woman, right? That the media would give us was like, right, like 120 pounds and 5'9", right? Which is insane, right? It's like this tall, very thin woman, but she also had like big boobs and like a curvy butt, right? It was like this impossible standard. And so something that's great on TikTok that I've found that even if I'm having a bad body image day, I'll search, and it really helps body dysmorphia, I think, a lot, is search. Like you could type in like 150 pound female body and you will see so many different types of women, right? And the way you think 150 pound woman should look, everybody, I swear, is represented. And it kind of can help you be like, wow, so like, how do I see myself, or whatever it can be. I've seen even 180 pounds, 190 pounds, 200 pound woman, right? The what we've been trained to think is thin and small, or, you know, whatever. It's very interesting. It's an interesting TikTok search if anyone hasn't done it. And it came up on my For You page and I was like, wow, I wish I had this 10, 15 years ago, because I think it really is that media image sometimes that can mess with our brain. Well, it's like, well, I don't look like that, but why do I even want to look like that? Right. Again, the unpacking, the questioning, the journaling. But yeah, I think TikTok is can be a really great resource too.
And it's so interesting that you kind of framed it that way, Erica, because I usually see social media, and this is like dating myself, but I grew up without it. So it's one of those things where, like, when I was struggling with my eating disorder, I'm so glad that the only thing I had was Tumblr back in the day, because I didn't have all of these people sharing like what I eat in a day video that's actually very disordered and like under fueling. So I can see social media as being something that's super detrimental and toxic, right? But like you said, there's also really positive things that can be birthed from social media. And I think the ownership, or like the direction, whether it's positive or negative, lies with us in terms of, are we diversifying our feed? Like you mentioned, are we following multiple voices and people who are in bodies that look like ours and people who are in bodies that look nothing like ours? That was a great perspective shift.
Yeah. And I think you make a really good point, Nicole, which is like social media can be like the detriment of all of us, or it could be a tool that's can be used for good. But it's up to us, because like the algorithm will feed you the stuff that's going to like probably make you feel badly about yourself. So like having awareness of, like, as Erica was saying, what you want to curate and like taking responsibility for the content that you consume is like the only way to really, I think, create a healthy relationship with it.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I love that. Okay, so I want just quickly to kind of summarize our body dysmorphia talk. Diversifying social media feed is kind of like one tactic, something that we can do to help us start to see ourselves. What are some other like tangible takeaways that someone listening to this who maybe sees a photo of themselves or like passes their reflection and they're like, what the hell? Like, that's not me. Like, I don't see myself in that image. What can they do to maybe start seeing themselves?
Yeah. I think, again, I'm a big proponent of journaling, right? Getting clear, asking yourself questions. Well, like, why don't I like the way I look? Why don't I like the way I look? What do I think I'm going to achieve if I look differently? Right? Because I think sometimes, again, when we don't like the way we look, it's like, what are we seeking that we think looking different will find? Because as I mentioned, in my largest body, dream job, dream relationship, everything, right? Our bodies truly do not matter when it comes to our happiness or the things we have in life, right? So I think starting to unpack that as well. Another tip that might sound, kind of crazy, but I don't think it's crazy, but follow me for a second, is I think getting comfortable with yourself naked, like spend time alone with yourself, like, because I think sometimes clothes can really, and I've heard this as well,
from colleagues in the space as well. So this isn't just my tip, but right, like when we're alone and we're in clothes, or we can wear, especially if you're struggling with body dysmorphia, you can wear a lot of oversized clothes, right? So you're not really seeing your body. And I think learning to love our bodies as women and learning to, like, again, this is hard work, but I think spending time with yourself naked is important, even if you're looking in the mirror, all this stuff, because the more we normalize that, the more we're going to see, like, our body becomes less scary, right? As just this thing that we're in like a sack or in a clothing item we don't like. It's like really getting comfortable with yourself can really help. So I think spending time with yourself naked is a great one. And then again, if we're dealing with severe body dysmorphia, it can make you not want to go out or to prevent yourself from doing activities because of the way you look. And I think, again, working with a coach or working with a therapist can really help with that, because you got to go out, right? Like, even if it's, and we talked about this with Jenny too, not to keep referencing the episode, but we did a whole episode about this actually that's coming out again in October, but you kind of have to go out anyway. And that takes a lot of training and a lot of work and can be hard to do on your own. But even myself, as I mentioned, there are so many things I didn't do because of my body at the height of my body dysmorphia. And I regret that a lot. And I wish I was working with somebody at the time who could have helped me take that step forward. So, Ali, I don't know if you have any additional tips to add.
The last thing is we did an episode, it was a really long time ago, but this conversation is reminding me of it, with Amber Romaniak, I think is her last name. She's Canadian. And she shared a story with, in the height of her intense body dysmorphia, she chose to not go see a friend who wanted to get together with her. And he wound up dying in a car accident that week. And she never got to see him again. And so it just put into perspective, like, you know, we spend so much time and energy, and it's not to dismiss that this isn't real for people. Like, this is real for so many people. And so many of us struggle on different levels with it. And to try and keep in perspective, like, what is the most important thing for you, like how you want to spend your time and energy in this life that we have. And it's not to, like, go get the help, like go get the coach or the therapist and really get yourself support in this, because it is real. And I don't want to diminish that. But I think when she shared that story, putting into perspective, like, really, like, what was important, like never having gotten to see that friend again who she loved very much because of something that sort of felt like small when she looked back, like, oh, I didn't like the way I looked today. But like how that's put into perspective, when it's like human to human connections, friendship, love, family, those types of things, like really go back to your cores. Like, what are the most important things you value in this world? Because I think that can sometimes shift us away from all the focus we put on the external stuff.
Yeah, it's almost coming to terms with what your body dysmorphia or what your poor body image is costing you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can think of so many coaching conversations where things have been mentioned, like, I haven't been in a bathing suit or to the beach in over 10 years, or I don't remember the last time I wore a pair of shorts. I don't feel comfortable getting in the pool with my kids, you know, like whatever it is. But so many things that I think many of us would place much more emphasis on, and we're holding ourselves back from experiencing that because we're not in what society has deemed like an ideal body.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really put things in perspective. This was so helpful. Okay. So I feel like we could talk for the entire episode about body dysmorphia, but you mentioned a couple times you have an episode coming out about body image. So we'll have everybody reference that if they're looking for more information, kind of continuing this conversation. But I would be remiss if we didn't talk about something else. And Ali, I know that you can speak to this based on your personal experience as well, but I would love to shift the conversation a little bit to talk about health advocacy, because recently I was having a coaching conversation with a client and she was in need of some, you know, mental health treatment. And I said, okay, cool. Let's get an appointment on the calendar. Like, I want one of your action steps to be reaching out to your provider. And it came to light that she hadn't been seen by a provider in years, but she knew that she was struggling and needed to access care. And I was like, tell me what's going on there. And she mentioned that she has a sister who has always lived in a larger body and has constantly experienced discrimination from medical professionals. And since this client of mine was last seen by a provider, she had gained some weight herself, and she was mortified of the possibility of a provider commenting on her weight, even though that's not what she was looking to gain help navigating and potentially could be discriminated against because of her size.
Yes.
That's terrible. I don't have to tell you that. Like, it's just completely unacceptable. But can you lend a little bit of insight into like maybe how we can advocate for ourselves better in the medical, the healthcare field?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's real, unfortunately. There is discrimination in the medical system, whether it's on from by size, race, there's like unfortunately sometimes gender as well. We've done episodes on that. So, and I'm not saying that every provider, but like think of it as a bigger systemic issue with those things. And but like bringing it down to like, what do I do in the room and not avoid medical care because of the potential of that is that, you know, it's through my own learned experience, it's really getting in touch with knowing that you are the expert. No matter what, I don't care if you're struggling with body dysmorphia or any of the stuff that we're talking about, like real awareness of our body. At the end of the day, remember, you are the expert on what is going on with you. We can seek care from these professionals, and we should, especially if something is going on. And I don't want like the fear of discrimination to deter people from doing that. But at the end of the day, remember, you are the expert on your body. And if you can really try and listen, like get in touch with your gut or get in touch with that intuition, because, and that's different from fear and anxiety. So this is a thing that I think it's like normal to have anxiety and fear going into a medical environment. I was in for a checkup the other day, and sometimes my blood pressure still gets raised because I'm nervous, because I've had diagnoses in the past. I've had cancer. I've had some complications with different medical issues. So by nature, I'm going to have this in like anxiety when I go in. And, you know, the nurse was wonderful. And she's like, it's okay. We can take your blood pressure twice if you need to. Just like, and now I know I do really deep breaths. And I had two appointments, like sort of within a week of each other. Second time I went in, I was like breathing deeply. And it was like, my blood pressure was great. So things like that, like recognize what's anxiety. But if you feel like you're being dismissed or not listened to, don't take that just because someone's a medical professional as fact, or is that like they know best. You know, I had a doctor tell me to ignore what was going on in my back, and it wound up being a cancer diagnosis, and I didn't listen to him. And I'm so glad I didn't, because then I went to my general practitioner and she listened to me and she said, I'm not sure, but we're going to monitor this. And then when she wasn't sure, she referred me and we did more, we collected more data. Like this idea of doctors are infallible, which I think was a generational perspective sometimes, is not true. We can have respect. We can take in information, but also understand that they are just incredibly educated humans, but they are not the expert on you. You are the expert on you. And that anybody you choose to work with is working for you. And so to not lose that perspective and to be able to hopefully go in with that aspect of courage, it does take some courage, and ask questions. Again, it goes back to curiosity. If you don't understand something, don't leave until you have a real understanding. And like, you can ask them questions and you can call back. And yes, there's so many like other issues like access to care and access to quality care that we could go into. But as far as just like baseline advocacy, like remember, you're the expert of your own health and you're there to gather information and they're there to provide information, and you can seek multiple opinions and you can gather as much information as you need to do to make decisions about your own health.
Yeah. I just want to add too, that something that's been really helpful that I didn't know that, you know, I wasn't aware of when I was younger, is that, right, like doctors and your medical providers are working for you. So it's like, even though they might be in this position of, you know, quote, power, because they're the doctor, it's your choice whether or not you see them or not. They truly do work for you. So if you, I kind of think of it, especially when seeing a new doctor, it's like an interview process. Do I like them, right? Is this a doctor that's right for me? And if it's not, and again, we're talking about like baseline, if you have insurance, if you have access, if you have the ability of choice, this is what we're talking about. You can go to another doctor. And especially with therapy and mental health support, I'm so grateful someone told me that when I started looking for therapists specifically, because it took me 3 different people to find the right therapist for me. The first 2 I did not vibe with. One made like crazy faces while I was talking about my life. And if someone didn't tell me, you're interviewing them, you get to decide if you want to work with them, I would have been turned off therapy forever. And I think that's what happens. Someone has a bad experience with a doctor because their doctor is discriminatory or fat phobic or whatever it may be. And then they just don't go to the doctor. And so I think remembering that, like, it's your choice who you see. They, like, you have the power. You have just as much power. And then just to speak to anxiety versus intuition or gut feelings, like, I am somebody who really struggles with anxiety. And, you know, anxiety for me has always been emotional, and intuition and gut feelings are not emotional. They're just like a hit and a knowing. And so I try to differentiate the two when I'm in medical settings or when I'm making any decision. And when it comes to weight at the doctor, when I'm asked if I want to be weighed, I often say no, or if I have to be, I turn my back so I don't have to see the scale, right? Every scale is different, first of all. So I don't like to do that. They can't actually force you to be weighed. So if somebody is nervous about that, just take that into account. But we also know at this point, and there are a lot of doctors who do know that healthy comes in many different sizes, right? Healthy is not one size. And so again, there can be a lot of really terrible doctors out there, but there are a lot of great doctors. So if you go into it empowered with, this is my choice, not theirs, you really can take your power back in any situation, but medical especially.
I'd also just like, the last thing I'd like to add to this conversation, because I don't know that everybody is aware of this. You know, on average, doctors have 19 hours of nutrition education in medical school. And that's not a lot. That's not even like, that's like a half a week of work for it, like a regular 40-hour work week. And so in all of medical school, and it's not to say that some doctors aren't aware of certain nutrition kind of core things, but it's not a part of our medical curriculum. And those 19 hours are often like really specialized things as far as like nutrients, if someone's dealing with certain disease or something like that. Or, and so I just want, you know, like when people go in and if they are feeling like, you know, the doctor is commenting in a way, in a discriminatory way, especially about weight or food or nutrition. I mean, it's usually like, you know, what is the doctor like? Oh, you're going to have to lose weight. Like, that's kind of as far as they go, whatever that means. They're not trained in that space. And you go to any hospital and the food that's provided for, like, you know, diabetics who just had open heart surgery, you'd understand that nutrition is not well integrated into our hospital and our medical system. So that's just another thing to keep in mind, that you don't have to, like, the doctors are not the nutritionists, and even the RDs are not always focused to talk about nutrition in a way that is supportive and kind and caring. And it's nobody's fault. It's just not a part of the system. So just take that with a grain of salt and find either a nutritionist or a coach or somebody that can support you in that, if that's something that's important to you, in a way that feels empowering and not discriminatory.
I think that's so important. I actually will never forget. I was seeing a physician and she actually asked me for my business card because she acknowledged, like, I know nothing about nutrition. She was struggling with where she was at. She was like, can I have your card before you leave today? And I was like, this is amazing. I also really loved, Erica, that you mentioned I've never actually thought about it that way. Like even your PCP or your therapist works for you. The best piece of advice I ever got before seeking out a therapist was treat it like dating. I feel like this conversation keeps coming back to dating somehow, but it was a friend of mine and she had been in therapy and she was like, if the first therapist is not it, cool, not a match. No big deal. Doesn't mean anything bad about you or them necessarily. It's just find your fit. And that was just so helpful. I think we can take the same perspective when it comes to medical providers also.
Yes.
Allie, do you have, we'll wrap up with this question. Do you have a response or I guess we could call it a clap back if maybe you're going to the doctor to be seen mm-hmm. for a sore throat or something completely unrelated mm-hmm. to your weight. And because the health industry is sort of BMI centric and focused, maybe the person you're seeing is like, hey, have you thought about losing 20 pounds? Has nothing to do with why you're being seen or why you're accessing care. Is there a response mm-hmm. that we can give if we don't want weight to be the topic of conversation?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think you can be honest and respectful, but with bringing in awareness. So like perhaps that doctor could learn from that interaction with you. You could say like, I understand that that's like a part of what you address as far as your kind of criteria, but that's not why I'm here. I'm very well aware of my own sort of like the way I need to support my health right now, including my mental health. And I would prefer not to discuss that with you. I'd prefer to focus on what I came to see you about and just redirect it back so that that physician can, like, I think most people aren't malicious. I think they're not aware and they're just sort of used to doing, oh, this check, check, check. Oh, do you smoke? No. Da-da-da-da. How much alcohol? Da-da-da-da. What's your weight? Da-da-da. And you said it's BMI centric, which we know now is not a good marker of health. And so just to, you know, you can bring it to their awareness and redirect back to what you are seeking from them in that moment.
So helpful. Yeah. I don't think we want to be rude necessarily about, I mean, I've just heard from so many women who are like sitting there in the chair, sweating, so uncomfortable when they have a right to say something and have that time be taken up by solutions for the problem they actually came to discuss. And maybe they're feeling like, you know, they're taking full control of their health and their nutrition in other ways. And it's just not something that needs to be addressed. I also love, Erica, that you mentioned you don't have to be weighed. You can select to omit that from your visit or step on the scale backwards if they feel as though it's something that they need for their treatment in one way, shape, or form. So helpful. Yeah. Okay, ladies, this conversation was amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your expertise. Before we wrap up, I need you to tell everyone listening where they can find you and learn more about Courageous Wellness Collective and where they can access this episode that's coming out in October that we keep talking about.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So we are Courageous Wellness Podcast. You can listen to us on all podcast platforms. We release episodes every single Wednesday and we have over 270-280 episodes on every topic. You know, wellness for us is physical, emotional, spiritual, financial. We cover it all. So that's the podcast. We also do integrative nutrition health coaching. You can find all of that on our website, courageouswellness.net. We also do corporate events and group coaching. So yeah, I think that's everything. Allie, am I missing anything?
At Courageous Wellness on Instagram, that's probably what we're most active on. And our podcast is on all podcast platforms. And also, you will be able to check back at some point and hear Nicole on our show.
So exciting. And everyone will be listening to your episodes in real time because we always release episodes on Wednesday. So now they're going to be like, I get to listen to two back to back. Amazing.
Amazing.
Amazing. Yes. And that episode we've been teasing, I think will be out in October. So you can look out for it as well. So yeah.
Thank you so much, Allie and Erica. It was a pleasure to have you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com where you can sign up for my weekly emails where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right.
Thanks for listening. Until next time.